Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
Welcome to Idle Red Hands. Playing us in was Roadkill by Tripod Jimmy. I'm Lyle.
I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne. Privateer Press is going to come out with a two-player box for
Oh, that killed you, yeah. Because you put in that massive order.
Yeah, I put in the massive order and bought a bunch of battle boxes. So basically, before this, you had a battle box, which was a playable list, depending on which faction you got, right? They're all playable, but it was only kind of for one player. You got one faction in the box. And those were about, like, $50. So they just recently announced, well, not so recently when you hear this, but a two-player box that is between Kador and Menoth. Mm-hmm. So you essentially get those two battle boxes plus a quick start rule book, a how to paint stuff, tape measures, dice, templates, and a unit for each force of pretty expensive troops. Only for $99.99. So you're getting, and I had just
a low price. So.
Yeah, the low price. It sounds rather high. But I was listening to someone.
Now that I hear you saying it again, when you first said it, I said, "Oh, that sounds like a deal." And then I'm thinking that's just kind of like the Warhammer Fantasy Battler, Warhammer 40K
army box.
Not army boxes. They're
like
game boxes.
Black Reach, like the, or whatever.
They're roll out the latest edition of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose
and
that's true.
I'd argue they probably give you even more.
They do
than that.
In the one sense, yeah, I guess GW does give you more, and that you get a lot more figures, right?
Right.
But I would argue that the play value is about the same because you
can. Okay, then what? Same price?
No, yeah, well, fair enough. I was mainly sort of pissed off about the fact that.
But when you look at a GW thing, you get a lot more models than that. Which gives you an ability to play larger or smaller battles and to mix and match more.
Yeah, however, I've heard people argue, and I would tend to agree with them, that only the larger GW games, larger point-sized GW games, are fun, right? Like, you have to get up to, like, 1,500 points before things actually... Or at least, really? Like, 1,000 points before you actually have enough flexibility to do interesting things.
I don't know. I stopped playing Warhammer back in the last edition, but we always had fun with...
Last edition, we're up to, like, 5 now.
I stopped in 4.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, I always had fun with 200, 500 battles.
200 points?
Yeah.
What do you get in 200 points besides, like, a leader and a unit of troops?
Yes, about that. You do, like, little skirmish battles. In fact, the Imperial Guard rulebook had lots of special scenarios for just, like, little squads. It was quite fun.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, my main point was I bought two...
Was, buy it now at $9.99.
Yeah, no, my main point was...
At the low, low price of $100 freaking dollars!
I was sort of complaining the fact that I bought two battle boxes for $100, and if I just waited until, like, the end of September, I could have gotten this other thing...
That'll get
what I just ordered, mm-hmm. and more for the price that I paid.
Yeah, but a tape measure and dice?
No, I would have gotten two infantry.
I would have gotten two factions, as mm-hmm. well as some, like, the units they were offering, retail for about, like, $45 each. So you're essentially getting, like, $190 worth of stuff in this $100 box.
Best investment I ever made for those kind of games was downloading a free copy of OpenOffice. So Word, you can do spreadsheets and Word documents and little drawings and things. You draw a little circle on it and you write on, like, Gene Steeler or Ultramarine. And then you send a picture back and forth with your friends and just play like that. Free. It was wonderful.
Yeah, we played some of those games with the little circle cutouts. And
it's not the same.
Granted, it's not the same as having a done-up board and that, but man, I could eat for a month off of what I spend on one army.
Dude, a month? Try several, but anyway.
Anyway, that's my gripe. About that. It's like, I think it's a fan. They're all fantastic games. They're so much fun to play, but it's just too expensive for me.
Maybe your tune will change after I run you through that demo day.
I hope so. Like, I'd love to get back into it, but I just can't afford it.
I'm honestly not fooling myself into thinking that other people will actually buy models.
As long as you're paying, I'm in, man.
that's the way I've looked at it.
I'll play with your toys.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? And if that's the way I have to get opponents, then that's the way I'll do it. So
speaking of little figurines and models and props and such, what are we talking about today?
Well, today we're going to talk about props.
Ooh!
Yeah. And a little change in format, giving props to the prop masters here. I will be asking
hard-hitting, intelligent interview questions
to Wayne and Chris. And I believe Wayne will be interjecting into my questions. Because you two do a lot more props than I do in the games that you run, so I thought it would be better just to pick your brains and find out, you know, why you do it and get your thoughts on why you did certain things.
Yeah,
sounds good.
All right. So obviously you guys think props are important.
Oh yeah, they are the cool.
The cool, nice.
All right. So why are they important? So, Chris, why are props important to a role-playing game?
Immersion. I think having something that the players can hold in their hands and experience and touch, I think that's worth a lot as far as bringing them into the game.
Okay. So why not take it a step further and do, like, LARPing, like costumes and...
Well, I think there's a pretty big...
Where do you draw the line?
Costumes is one of them.
Okay.
I think... one of the things that I think is important for that is not to force the players to do anything, because they're kind of just, players just come in to have fun like that. So it's something that I can give them that they can play with. And if they want to get into it more themselves, fantastic. But I'm not going to say, here, you have to wear this top hat because you're playing a duke or something like that. Because, you know, dukes wear top hats.
He's a monocle.
I don't know. But also the big thing about LARPing is I wouldn't want to do it outside.
Okay, so basically props are, you feel that you're not forcing stuff onto the players. So how does it help immersion?
It involves more of the senses. Instead of just listening to what the game master is saying, you get to touch something. You get to look at it. You get tactile. You can play with it. And I think that having all those different sensations as well as being able to interact more just brings your brain into the game. I think props often carry a lot of meta gaming with them as well, because when players get it, they actually do get into it, but sometimes they forget about the game because they're into having an object to play with. But, you know, if it's more fun, it's more fun.
All right. Can you think, like, sometimes props can be a crutch in a game?
In what way?
In a sense, like, where you're throwing out flavor props.
Mm-hmm.
And Wayne, an example is when we used the... You had a book wrapped in paper.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that was to represent a diary. Mm. But there wasn't actually a diary. But it was so there was something physical on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that help with the immersion, or does that kind of dress up a game?
I don't know. My ultimate goal for that one, I was actually working on making a diary.
Right.
There were actually going to be pages inside that were relevant to the story.
Mm-hmm.
But there was supposed to be a pretty thick journal, right? And obviously I wouldn't have had time to make all these pages. And ultimately that what was inside wasn't really important. The journal wasn't all that important. It was just sort of the addresses on the package that mattered to the story, which is why I sort of wrapped that thing up and put the addresses on it. But I guess it can kind of take people out of the story sometimes, because then people were kind of flipping through this book. And the person who took it was Yujiro. I had to lean over and say, pretend this has important stuff in it. Even though it was just kind of a regular novel, paperback novel that I had sitting in my house. So I guess on the one hand, it created immersion, like Chris said, but then I actually had to break that by saying, imagine this has something relevant in it, or pretend it has something relevant. So I don't know.
How about pictures? And I'm actually including you in this, Lyle, because you use pictures as well. A lot of times, do you guys both use pictures as flavor more, or as more sort of content props? Does that make sense?
I think in my case, I think it did become a crutch, and that I was using pictures when I probably could have got a better effect just explaining, you doing more with narrative, verbally setting the scene. So I would spend some time a lot of my preparation time looking for the picture that would help set the scene when I could have better spent my time finding or just thinking of how I would do that with a description. I still think pictures for characters can be really good.
Yeah.
Because it also helps to remind you of who the NPC is.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I have a tendency to do a lot more function over form for props.
Yeah.
Because I made a diary as well, but I didn't wrap it in anything. It was literally pieces of paper inside of folded pieces of paper.
Yeah, but in that case, you're talking about the content of the diary is actually important.
Yes.
And therefore, that's why the stuff that we needed was there.
Well, that's the thing, is I think if it were, if the content were not important, I probably wouldn't have had a prop at all.
Well, yeah.
No, I would. So, no,
sorry,
no, no. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. In that,
I'm only the guy asking the question.
Thus, I'm answering. So, yes. Pictures are important because it helps the players to remember who they are talking to. Instead of just a name, you have a face to go to it. Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. In less than flavor. That's why and how I use pictures.
Right.
So, sorry to interrupt. Go on.
No, no, and just to finish on that, but I think pictures can be great if you find pictures of scenes and pictures of places, but I wouldn't only use the pictures.
Okay.
I would then, you know, if you choose to do that, still spend effort on describing it. And if it came down to, when it comes to the setting, as opposed to the NPCs, if you don't have time to do both, then just do the description. Just from my experience, I find the description is a better way to get people immersed in the game than an actual picture of where you are.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that, yeah.
Immersed in the game or immersed in the story?
Wouldn't they kind of be the same thing?
Well, no.
Are we going to split hairs here?
Well, the reason I'm asking is because, for example, I gave you guys a coded message in one of the last campaigns, and that you as players were working on figuring it out, not as characters for it. And you were all very engrossed in it.
So, okay, so... out of curiosity, how would we have gone about solving that puzzle as characters versus solving it as players? That's something you can't really separate, in my
opinion. Exactly. But the thing is that you guys didn't use your characters at all. Like, you talked to each other as Wayne and Lyle, not as as Tannel and Marius.
You're thinking that it became a game within a game?
Yeah, exactly. And it was very metagamey. So you guys were very engrossed. You played it for a long time. You seemed very interested. I hope so, anyway. But you didn't seem like you were into the story of it, more into the puzzle of it.
I think more so than that, now maybe I'm agreeing with you, is it's just one of those things where are you playing your stats or are you just playing?
Mm-hmm.
And in a case like that, nobody had cryptography
or
something like that. I suppose we could have made intelligent rules,
but
for the most part, we were just doing it.
Yeah,
and in that case, that's fine. If we get stuck, then... you could say to the most intelligent, or have everybody make intelligence rolls to see, and give them hints.
Yeah, and that's probably what I would have done too. But I mean, for me, my philosophy.
But I mean, really,
how would you solve it as characters?
No. But like, how is the discussion not as characters? And
yeah,
as players? Because I mean, if somebody, sorry, I don't understand that. Because we kind of talked about the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, the conversation is going to be limited to the puzzle.
Yeah.
You're not going to say, as an Eladrin,
I would see how we could
put
our
characters
into that.
Do a lot of exposition about your...
Yeah, I suppose you're right on
that. I'll work in some backstory here. My brother did a lot with codes.
Mm-hmm.
Not Lyle's brother.
Marius's
brother. I mean, if you have something like that, people are going to talk about it as the code.
Actually, what you brought up there is, like, your characters didn't have... that, for example, like Wayne's character, you were a priest. So kind of figuring out that how a code works is not something that you would have had experience with before. And you didn't mention that, but now that you say about that, I suppose you're right. It wasn't something so difficult that you needed a cryptography PhD to figure out. So, but regardless of that, like I think my philosophy is as long as everybody around the table is having fun, I don't really care that much about if you're in character or out.
I would almost see providing a prop as... sort of exclusive from them than saying, give me an intelligence roll.
Mm-hmm.
Because sort of asking for a stat roll or some kind of mechanic thing, in my opinion, represents the character's knowledge or experience in something.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you put a prop, such as like a puzzle, down in front of the players, you are sort of, maybe not with words, but by your action, you're inviting the player to solve this sort of as a player.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is why you gave them the prop. You want them to give that interaction rather than just sort of, say, rolling a die or pretending to be their character.
Hmm, really? So when you gave us the book with the address on it, you were expecting us to break character then?
No,
It's not talking about breaking character.
No, I'm not talking about breaking
he's
character.
He's saying, like, ignore the stats for a moment.
Yeah.
Ignore the dice.
Yeah. Using, in my opinion, using a prop says, don't look at your stats, look at what's in front of you.
He could be saying...
And I agree completely.
As your character do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what would your character say?
Mm.
If your character doesn't care,
mm-hmm.
then he doesn't need to, or she doesn't need to be involved.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it's... Yeah.
But what about when we talk about distractions, like props being a little bit distracting. You were saying you have to tell Yujiro to put the book down, or the book wasn't important.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, I think I was thumbing through it. It was like a paperback or something.
Yeah, just a regular paperback that I'd put a binding on. Yeah.
Right. But, like, for example, in the Weird War game, Chris, you had us looking at a box that had some things that were important to the story and some things that maybe weren't
important. And not at all important, yeah.
And not at all important, but that means that we're spending time going through this box of props, and some of it's just there for flavor.
Yep.
And you actually have to say, oh, forget about it. Like, at a certain point, because we were fixated on, well, why would we have this in the box? Or it was something that we wouldn't have ever been able to figure out as characters.
Yeah.
I think there was candles, which we did use, and we talked about that in the Fate episode, which was quite effective. Then there was a tarot card deck. Which we would have never figured out how to use that in game. So you actually said,
I made that up on the spot.
Oh, so that was the distraction?
It was everything but the candles and the lighter could have had a use or didn't have to have a use. But you guys seemed really interested in what everything else was, so I just made stuff up.
I think...
Yeah, so do you think that kind of doesn't immerse us in the game, but actually distracts us from the game? Because the game stops. We unpack everything, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, candles. Well, what are we going to use these for? Mm-hmm. What are we gonna... And then it was like, a tarot card deck. Do we even know what this is? Mm-hmm. Like, sorry. And then breaking character to ask, do we know what a tarot... I mean, it was in the 40s. You could see that a lot of people, you know, those, you know, spiritual bookshops are kind of rare.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a farm boy from the South,
you know, or from New Jersey. Just shut up there and just let you guys do whatever with
it. I suppose, yeah.
Would have been best.
Instead of, like, snatching it from our hands and saying, ah, oh, yeah, you could, this could be used for refresh rules.
But because of the short time, it was probably easy to just get out of it.
It might be one of those, this is a specific case, but it might have been the way it was presented, because, and this is not really a criticism, but it was all in the same box. Mm-hmm. And so we assumed that all these things were somehow related. If they're supposed to be sort of separate props, or if coming from different sources, perhaps actually giving them to us as separate objects would have been, what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, this thing, if I was going to give them to you separately, then that would have implied that each is important.
Okay.
Actually, giving it to us regardless would have implied that they're important.
True.
Because there's so many items, like, you don't go, and here's your sword, and then hand over a physical sword.
Right.
Because a lot of, and I think this, awesome. This, what we gets down to, when we talk about props is when to use them, when not to use them, because we're playing a game that's all in your mind. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, when do you do it? When do you not do it? And sometimes, you know, what I'm calling flavor props that have no, there's no puzzle.
Why I include those other things is because the candles were necessary and the matches were also necessary for what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But, if I had only given you candles and matches, right away you would say, oh, okay, well, we're going to have to light the candles at some point tonight. That's part of this game.
But is that a problem? Like, could you have not have given us the candles at that point and saying, okay, guys, you know it's dark, and turn off the lights and then give us the candles?
I could have done that, but I wanted you to have the candles. What I was hoping for would have been great is if you turn off the lights and we sit in the dark.
That's
why we need candles. Mm.
And you could have... cut somebody and they started bleeding and said, oh, that's why there was gauze in the box.
But remember, like I said, I was trying to give, to keep it as a kind of high, exciting, pulpy kind of adventure until it went to the dark side of things.
Yeah.
So if I had the candles right off, you could guess that I was going to do something where you might need the candles, such as turn off the lights. And I mean, I think you guessed that anyway.
Hmm.
But so the rest were red herrings to try and make the candles look less significant.
So what advice would you give for somebody who is using flavor props? What I'm defining as flavor props.
They're
there to decorate the table.
Yeah. I think that's a tough question.
Now, there's something that in Vampire, you got part of it when you're investigating the murders, and you're supposed to be there to cover up some murders. So you went to the police station, and you did receive the physical copy of the file, like the autopsy report and that. When you go back to talk to the detective the next day, on his desk with some books on vampires, and there were going to be physical books on vampires. Was going to be the detective's notebook, which would have been presented in front of you, and whether or not you chose to steal those books or the notebook, which was actually the big thing to steal, and the other things were there to actually to help draw attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here it is, but also to kind of obfuscate it somewhat.
I see.
So here it is.
So the same kind
this
of
thing. This is on his desk.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have grabbed everything,
mm-hmm.
or that one notebook, which is with all these books on vampires.
Hmm.
Actually, it was a little bit...
So in that case, it's there to draw attention, to not to draw attention away, but actually to draw attention to...
But you're including the other ones to draw attention away from the notebooks.
No,
to draw attention to the notebook.
Mm-hmm.
So that all of this is on the desk. Like, if I say this is on the desk, and then put a notebook, then I should have just said, there's a notebook on the desk.
Right.
His detective notebook,
mm-hmm.
then you would say, okay, I steal it, and then physically hand over the notebook to you. Okay,
yeah.
You got it.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the other way, which would have said, and these books are on the desk, and on top is a little tiny notebook.
Mm-hmm.
But you would have just looked at the books and seen that all of the books talk about vampires, and there's a little notebook on top.
Well, that kind of goes in the same grain as when you're, even if you don't have props, how you describe a scene. For example, if you have the players walk into a room and you say, yeah, it's a regular room, 10 by 10, and there's a silver pen lying on the desk. Of course, first thing the players are going to do, I go look at the pen.
Right.
But if instead you say, you describe a lot about the room, the pen might be important, but you say there's this red velvet drapes and a heavy oaken desk, and on top of the desk is a silver pen, that you're kind of putting the pen, which might be important, along with the rest of the dressing.
Dragging the oaken desk. Take the oaken desk with me, get the drapes, shove that in my backpack. Anyway, what else did you mention? What else did you mention?
But
the chair? Did he mention the chair?
No.
A reason to do that is so that you don't have that mad rush for the pen, which is completely metagame.
Which but I think is difficult to do with props,
mm-hmm.
because players, for better or worse, they kind of metagame. Like, if you physically hand them something, and I understand why you're doing it, right?
Let me get out my desk.
Yeah, no, if you, like, yeah, unless you actually do that, which comes close to LARPing, unless you actually, so, for example, set up a desk,
mm-hmm.
and you say, this is what you see.
By the way, I've rented out this entire building.
Yeah.
Every
yeah.
room has been...
Hey, that would be an awesome campaign.
And
there.
that would be LARPing. Yeah.
I'm cool with LARPing as long as it's not outside in society.
I don't know. Anyway, I think... My point was it's much easier to sort of not draw attention away. It's a lot easier to provide a lot of information and not make it obvious what is important when you're describing things.
Right.
It's a lot more difficult, much more difficult, to use props to do it, because no matter sort of how many props you present, the players are going to focus on them because
they're important.
There are physical representations of them.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that's not presented to them as a prop is immediately not as important.
Well, then can I ask, for example, the vampire books with the notebook. Are the vampire books important?
Were they important?
Mm-hmm.
They were important in the story in that the detective is now researching vampires. And then all of the stuff that you, if you bothered to read through the books, mm-hmm. would have been all the knowledge that this detective has.
Okay.
But the notebook was much more important.
So how would you handle it if the players fixated on those books? They started like asking what do they say, what's written down in them?
Oh, it would have been you can keep the books. Of course, they were my books, so mm-hmm. take good care of them.
In other words, don't give them to Wayne.
Don't give them to Wayne.
You're lying. You would never let me have your books.
I've given you all those comics and that.
Crap.
But it would have been this, like, this is what this person, I mean, how much of that's in these books does the person believe?
Mm-hmm.
Would be for us to find out.
Well, yeah, it would be. You would use the notebook to help unlock that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, conceivably, not at the gaming table. But yeah, I would have left the books with you.
Okay.
So to look through and say, conceivably, this is what this guy's reading. So, and that could also help you understand this is what people in the world think of vampires.
Mm.
Okay. So. That's what I would have done, but it's also one of those things where if you really want to give somebody like a couple 200, 300 page books,
mm-hmm.
which they're not going to be able to get through.
Especially with, me.
Yeah, which with minimal reward, because actually it's the notebook itself that has all the most important information.
Yeah.
It's how this detective has tied the vampire mythos to the specific case. But that was an experiment.
Yeah.
And whether it would have had the payoff that I would have liked, I don't know. Because it could have just been, you see a bunch of books about vampires on the desk, on top of it is a notebook, and if you had decided to steal the notebook, just hand it over.
Yeah.
And I think probably that would have had been just as good to do.
Yeah.
And would probably require less, like, after-game reading on the part of the player.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think sometimes when you do present a prop, although it can really dress up a table, it can also distract and actually do the opposite of what I think a good prop can do, and which is to, as you said, Chris, to immerse the players and can actually become a distraction. And I would even recommend, if you say, I actually wanted there to be a physical journal, and you don't have time to do it, then don't do it. Like, don't do something and say, I'll get back to it, because whatever you're using as a placeholder, in this case, a paperback fiction book, then becomes something that people start just reading through. There's enough distractions at the gaming table as it is. Mm-hmm. And I would think if you want to turn off the lights and give candles, then I have no problem with, like, they give you a bunch of torches or candles or whatever. Why we don't have flashlights in World War II, I don't know. But
hey, man, you guys just poor equipped. You've got bags full of grenades, a pillowcase of grenades, but no flashlights.
Yeah, they were provided as props, though.
Yeah, they were not grenades as props.
If there had been grenades in that tin, I would have been all for it. Cool.
But you actually said that, Chris, that somebody had a very good prop, and I believe you brought it up in the episode. Is where they represented how ammunition.
Yeah.
Where you actually physically gave them. And I could see that working.
Just as a reminder, a friend of mine, he had a little, like, 2x4 block of wood, and he drilled holes in it and stuck shell cases in it to represent clips of ammo. As you shot, you'd pull out the shell cases.
And stuff like, I think that could work for arrows or grenades.
It was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of the groups I played in the past, as a player, didn't use props, even to the point of not using pictures either. I think occasionally a letter we might receive might be written out, but that's about it. I think before I met you, Wayne, I was the most proppy guy I knew. Now, yours are beautiful. You make really gorgeous props.
Speaking of beautiful props, is you actually did something with the character sheets in a recent game.
Oh, yeah. So
where we had little passports.
Yeah, and I can't claim full credit for that idea.
But I will anyway.
No, because I saw an example of someone else's, and they had made these little sort of passport-size character sheets for the Hollow Earth Expedition set. And I just said, I really like that idea, and since it's going to be a con game and sort of essentially introducing new people to this system and this story, it would be cool to do that. So I kind of modified it. In other words, I sort of condensed a lot of information that you wouldn't need for a one-shot game and sort of simplified other things. And
Were you just sprucing up a character sheet, or do you think that actually contributed to immersing the players?
Honestly, even though I made those little props, honestly, I think it was just sprucing up a character sheet.
Okay.
And I agree, you know, there's, even if you're not immersing the people more, there's still something to be said to get a little book and say, wow, that's cool. It's a cool factor. And that's,
yeah. Which that's is essentially important. Why I did it. I just wanted to kind of say, wow, that's kind of cool.
Does it help sell the game?
I think it does, which is part of why I did it. You know, kind of want to sell the game and kind of like, oh, I have this cool little book to look through and, hey, there's a picture of my character in that. Yeah. And so.
Do you think that was a case, though, of form over function? Because one thing in there is that people have to flip through multiple pages. Obviously, you call it a character sheet because information as possible is crammed onto one or two sheets. And if it gets on the three, you're like, well, why isn't it on two?
Yeah.
Whereas there, by virtue of the fact it's a passport, it was multiple pages. I mean, is it worth it to have people flip through different pages, do you think?
Sometimes, no.
Could you have done something with the one-page restriction or the two-page restriction?
I probably could have sort of printed it on, I don't know, some kind of interesting paper. My original idea was to almost have kind of like a character file and have it printed so that it looked like a photo was paper-clipped onto the sheet of paper and present it in a manila folder.
Yeah, right.
Probably would have been just as effective.
I think it would have been more functional, but with the passport, we see ourselves as globe-trotting adventurers, which is, I suppose, what we were. With a manila folder, are we criminals? Like, why are we in a manila folder?
More like CIA or FBI investigator thing.
Which we weren't.
No.
Right.
I don't know. Like, it's hard to say. For a campaign, passports probably wouldn't have worked. Just to, because you have to keep flipping through it, and your character gets modified and things.
I actually disagree, because, like, what I said, I modified it, right? And it was kind of designed for people who hadn't played the game yet. So the first two pages of the passport were a sort of a very condensed version of the rules and actions you could take, which maybe they weren't useful because you had to flip to multiple pages, but I saw it as a way of, you know, while the person's sort of not taking their turn, they could look and, okay, these are the things I can do on my turn.
So yeah, I think that actually those passport things work really, you know, work really well for a con game, because that way you could say, write out your rule set and the actions that you can do and say, all right, if someone's asking, what can I do? Look at page 3. You don't have to point to anything on their sheet. You know, what are my stats? Look at page 4. So that, I thought that might work out pretty well.
Since I actually liked the passport idea for a campaign, because in sort of the passport idea, it was the first half was your character information. Then after that, it was a lot of pages where the players could write in such as places they had been, people they had met, relationship with other people. And I saw that as Lyle said, the game is your kind of globe-trotting adventurers, and I thought then a passport works really well.
That's a really great idea. You know, I didn't even think of that aspect. The reason I was thinking it was no for a campaign is A, because you just might get tired of flipping pages when you could be looking at a sheet, and B, because characters advance and they evolve and you might have to write and erase and maybe ruin this nice passport. But that thing you say about adding in like things, stamps or something, that's a really cool idea.
That's why I thought a passport was pretty awesome.
I like that.
Now, getting back to what you were talking about immersion.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Just the way you like casually turn towards Chris with the pen.
He said it
like...
wasn't casual. It was almost robotic. at your leisure, sir.
Now, you kind of made a distinction, Chris, about game and story.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what you think. As the person who did the most with the battle mats, and maybe because you were running a Dungeons & Dragons campaign, but you actually had props like shifting floor for the battle mat, you know, to represent like little, I guess, islands on the lava.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's how immersing people in the story, or is it just adding to the game?
That was specifically for the game. Yeah, I don't know. Battle mats, they get a yes and a no for that on whether they're good or bad for immersion. Because if you're playing without a battle mat, you constantly get the question, all right, where am I? Where are these other guys in relation to it? And that takes you out of the game, but you're more free to imagine how things are and how they look around you. Whereas with the battle mat, you don't have that question, but you have the counting. You know, one, two, three, four, five spaces I can move. So, both. And it's actually interesting that you say that, because I never used dressed-up battle mats. I didn't draw pictures, or I didn't, have a stone, printed out stone maps for dungeons. But I made sure to print out actual images for all of the monsters that you guys fought.
Okay.
So, it was interesting kind of, half-assed version of that.
I don't know, I think it would have been sort of...
Can that run into... Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that could be even, not printing out representations of the characters on the little stand-up, say, and instead using beads or tokens. I think that could sort of take away from the immersion, even more.
Yeah, and one of the
reasons...
Because it's more abstract.
And that actually brings in the weaknesses of both, because then you're both counting, and you got to say, wait, what is this bead again? Mm. Is this bead a Nazi, or is this one a Gollum, or something like that? But I think that's... Well, what did you guys think? I mean, the 4E is very specific, because when the battle mat comes out, kind of the immersion stops. But.
I'm not going to be able to give an objective answer, because, once the battle mat did come out, 4E switched over to counting squares and a very tactical game. So, I don't know.
I'm going to disagree a little. Yeah, I think even within our group, some people counted more than others.
Yuji loves system, and he was big in on that. You know, he was planning that very much the thing. But I remember, like, you didn't care that much. You said, all right, is it close enough that I can jump across the boat? I jump across the boat and I kill everything there.
Yeah, because I think, like...
Which was a cool scene.
on the one hand, like, it is... Most role-playing game stories are kind of supposed to be a heroic story, right? The people are supposed to, or the players are supposed...
Mine
anyway, yeah. Their characters are supposed to feel like heroes. So, sometimes with the battle mat or with anything... Things can get a bit bean countery or number crunching when, you know, like, if this were a story or if this were a movie, this is what my character would do. And this would be awesome or heroic. And the rules are preventing me from doing that. So.
I don't know. I mean.
It depends on the dungeon master.
Yeah. And, you know, you can say a lot, like, it can be just as fun a story, you know, that you leaped across the chasm and killed the dragon there. It can be just as cool if you leaped across the chasm, but you didn't quite make it and you landed on your ass in front of the dragon.
I'm not quibbling about the rules. I would say, like, yeah, if it's kind of dramatically appropriate for, you know, the action to fail or whatever, or if the story would be just as cool if you leap across that chasm and land on your feet and do a tactical roll, right, and put up your shield when the dragon breathes fire, or if you jump across the chasm and you fall on your ass and you scramble to put up your shield, both of those are cool. It's when you count the square and you say, you know what, I'm 2 squares short of jumping that chasm. I'm not going to do it.
So you have to think more tactically about it.
Which, it can be good sometimes, but then you're like, all right, well, I can't do that, and I can't do that. I really want to do that, because that would be heroic and awesome. Instead, what can I do? I'll double move towards the bridge,
yeah,
I guess.
Well, it's kind of exactly what we're saying. That's if that's fun, then that's
if you're at
fun.
The back of the room and the back of the cave, and should you be able to jump across a chasm if you can't physically do that?
Well, if you can't physically do it,
No matter how heroic it would be for you to run 100 meters and then jump 50 meters, I don't know.
Well, actually, Lyle, I do want to hear your opinion on it as well, because you like to do really cinematic-y kind of things in combats. How was it for you playing on a grid?
I thought it was fine. The two cautions with a battle mat would be, one, just be, same as if, like, you're using a picture for the setting, is that don't let it take away, and I'm not saying that this happened when we were using the battle mat, but take away from your responsibilities as a game master to describe what's happening. Yeah. And also, and this is just about props in general, sometimes if you're using, you gotta be consistent, so if you have, you know, the stone dungeon, and the elaborate, you know, photorealistic battle mat for one scene, and then you don't have it for the other scene. The other scene's going to pale in comparison.
True, true.
So it's kind of like a prop. If you're using a lot of props for this one session, and then suddenly no props, and you're describing, and then sporadic props in the next session, yeah, you got to be consistent if you're using it for that immersion, because then people will keep switching back, and it'll always just be, no matter how realistic it looks or how abstract it looks, it'll just be a battle map.
Yeah.
Because people keep having to switch.
You know, what's really...
But other than that, no, I think it's fine. And one thing, and I know we play kind of more storyteller games, you know, storyteller system, and every time we would have a combat, we'd always end up having to provide some sort of visual representation.
Where people are.
Because at a certain point, people kind of want to see, not necessarily a grid, but a little map. So at least they can start to orientate themselves, and they needed periodic updating to make sure everybody is kind of on the same page where each other were. I mean, you can do it without squares, and that's fine, but you don't necessarily need the map, but you need some literal page that everybody can be on.
Yeah, and I'll say, yeah, unless it's a duel between, like, two people, and you know pretty much exactly where everybody is, eventually you're going to need, yeah, some kind of visual representation of where people are.
But that said, you know, even we did a couple of battles, we did only one battle without it, where you guys were fighting invisible enemies, invisible stalkers, so you didn't know where they were.
No, but even
we still had a
battle. The difference with that is you did. Still rolled out a grid, and we were still counting.
That's 4E. I mean, you can't play 4E without the grid, period.
No, which is just part of the thing, but even that was on a grid, so it wasn't, I don't know if it's the same as what Lyle was saying.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, I think my point on that would be, or a personal tip would be to keep stuff minimal, both props and battle mats, you know, so you just draw the line, okay, these are the walls, just a single line, you know, don't, as Lyle said, if you print out You know, the stone textured floor battle mat for one, then you know, the next are going to pale in comparison.
But so, but if you want to do it, I think
if
that's
you do,
great.
If you do it for everyone, great.
And
you
know, there's a lot of them out there.
I've
like
never
you can...
used it myself, but the Wizards of the Coast, their dungeon tiles look really cool.
Yeah, when Paizo owned the license for Dragon and Dungeon, they provided a lot of... So I have a lot of these tiles because I would get them for my subscriptions. Mm-hmm. Subscriptions.
Yeah,
and they're great. It's just assembling it till you have enough. And they actually 3.5 towards the end, like the Expedition to Ravenloft and the Expedition to Greyhawk Ruins and the Demon Web Pits. Demon Web Pits. Scatty pets.
Dogs the size of spiders.
But they had like a different format for how they do encounters, where they say, like, basically when you get to an encounter, you flip to these, like, two pages, and it's everything you need for the encounter. And they would have these, like, sample tiles right in the corner, kind of, and it would show you what the thing looks like. But I was thinking, wow, they should have sold, like, something separate. You know, and I don't think they did, of the tiles that are in all these encounters. So you could have run this adventure, and then each time had a pretty decent-looking tile. We were talking about that video on YouTube where they're doing the D&D red box, and I was actually a little bit disappointed because they were using little miniatures. Mm-hmm. I said, "Oh, are those miniatures in the red box?" And they weren't. They're tokens. But I just thought even the miniatures added to that map, and it looked.
Yeah.
I remember looking at the. Granted, the video isn't very big, but I remember looking at those miniatures and saying, "That's why I don't do prepainted miniatures because." I don't know.
They were very good.
I mean, again, they're far away. But I remember one guy held up his character and said, "Oh, this is my wizard with his staff." And I'm like, "Is his staff supposed to be bent across his head like that? You know, probably not."
I noticed I noticed the spectral knight or the undead knight. His lance is
His lance looks like it's broken. It's like pointing at the ground. So,
but even with the bent spear, I thought it helped visualize it. So. But if the next combat I went into, you're moving around these little beads, then I would keep getting, it'd kind of be schizophrenic, you know, just either or, and let me immerse myself into your style. And I think that's a good point to raise, is that everybody's got a different style. Mm-hmm. Yeah, by virtue of the fact that you were running a battle mat game, so you had to do more with the battle mats and...
Which I like.
I think I would say you did, even within the narrative, you did more with the environment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Having, like, traps and that. And again, it was a fantasy game, so you have that. And I seemed to double down on pictures, so that became my style, which I wouldn't do in the future so much.
Really?
I would still, like I say, keep...
great pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah, or maybe I tried to do more, spend more time on the narrative. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was just a personal.
Especially compared, because my pictures sucked.
Well, you have a tough one. It's
you were probably the one that was most happy when Game of Thrones came out. You're like, finally,
finally, people actually look like they're from the medieval era.
Yeah,
I guess so.
Didn't you get those princesses were like from a prom dress?
Yeah,
website.
Yeah. It was even worse than a prom dress. It was like Southern Belle princess kind of dresses for it. Man, but that's the thing. Like, also, the campaign was very high fantasy, so it's supposed to be that medieval look, but it's also supposed to be really clean. Mm. So, and a lot of there's not that many high fantasy settings that have been made into movies or film or whatnot. So it was either that or fantasy art, and that I don't know. That
yeah, fantasy art's like a pretty mixed bag sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
So I said it's a lot easier to find photos for a modern or at least close to modern game.
God, yes.
What about getting players to make props for the game?
Well, actually, you'd probably have a lot to say on that, wouldn't you? With Vampire, you had us make our own will points, yeah?
Well, we had to provide it. I didn't make mine.
Yeah, I think...
I made mine.
that kind of came out of necessity, just like with the beads. It was very... There were certain things that needed to be tracked.
Hmm. Did the beads count as props?
I suppose, yeah. Where, like, you have to... If you're a storyteller and you have to track people's blood pool, and it's really hard to see... a dot's scratched off on a character sheet.
Yeah.
So using red glass beads to represent the blood, so you can at a glance see who's got a lot of blood, who doesn't have a lot of blood. Mm-hmm. And people were having trouble with the damage system. for combat. So using glass beads to represent the different types of damage and how much health you had, I thought was helpful. And then again with willpower, if you've spent willpower points, because then the storyteller has to track whether or not somebody's down on willpower. Whether you, by kind of playing their virtue or vice, they earn willpower points back. The decision was made that people, you know, choose something that's related to your character, or ideally either your virtue or your vice.
Yeah.
And when you're down to less than full willpower, put your kind of willpower token in front of you.
Yeah.
And that would act as like a little flag that you could potentially earn some back by playing your virtue or vice.
Yeah, it was also kind of a signal for you as the game master to watch out for these sort of opportunities where we as the players could sort of indulge these virtues and vice, so we wouldn't kind of have to say, oh, hold on, well, I just did this.
Right. So, yeah, exactly.
Were you surprised at what us players came out with?
Well, you had a cigarette.
Yeah.
So that was in keeping with your guy who is the maverick.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of tied it to the character as well, because you said, the character smoked before he became a vampire, and you decided that was kind of a holdover from when he was still human, even though...
But so mine was a very, almost a literal kind of prop, but yours, Wayne, was really different. You had a purple horseman?
Yeah, I did, because...
Sorry, that sounds really crappy.
Well, what I did is...
please describe it better.
Sure, you know...
So it was a purple horseman.
Yeah, exactly. So what it was is, for listeners who don't know, right, Japan has these little things called, like, the capsule toy shops, right, where you kind of have these little plastic figures, and you can buy them in, like, those little gumball vending machines, or they have, like, shops that specialize in selling them loose.
Gotcha, peen.
Yep.
Sorry.
So I went, and it was actually from, a demon series, and it was a representation. It was essentially a horseman of...
You painted it purple, too.
I painted it purple, and the reason why, my character's virtue... I mean, my virtue. My character's vice was...
Pride.
Yes. And I went online, thank you for reminding me, and the animal symbol for pride is a horse, and the color for pride is purple.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So I said, hey, there's a horseman, and I painted it purple, and I had a purple horse to represent my vice of pride.
That's interesting. Very, very metaphorical.
So it was more metaphorical, where yours was a very sort of literal aspect of the character.
Yuji's was good, too.
What was his?
That's completely in Jesse. Didn't have one.
All right. I was racking my brain. Like, damn, what was his? All right.
Well, even which is also quite telling.
Yeah, even
I was mouthing, what was it?
Yeah, I don't remember. I saw that, too. Like, even if he had picked one, I don't think his willpower ever went below full, so...
Yeah, exactly. Nor did his blood.
Nor did his blood pool. It's like, yeah, how much blood you got, you drew? Yeah, full. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But, yeah, in general, do you...
Well, that's the thing. Like, I said, as a general policy, I don't ask the players to put forward any extra effort towards the game. They can put in as much as they want. But seeing the results when you ask that, what the people came up with, how different Wayne and mine were, I think that's something that I might want to experiment with.
It gets people involved in the game. I don't know... how many opportunities you would really
have. More than game, I think it's interesting to see physically what these people think of their characters.
I'll say this. This kind of ties in a little bit to pictures, right? If you ask the players to provide something, right? Yeah. It kind of gives, I don't know, not that you already don't have ownership over your character, right? Mm-hmm. But it just gives you a little more ownership, right? So when I got that little purple horse, right, I was like, oh, today's vampire day, better put that in my bag, right? And kind of like, you know, this is mine, and going with the photos, right, like my character was working on setting up that herd, and so Lyle had me choose the pictures of the herd, and
herd, yeah.
No, that wasn't part of it, but anyway, because I had picked those pictures, I was a lot more invested in the story, like, ooh, that's right, I got to go see these people again to build up the relationship I'm trying to create. Whereas if I hadn't had those pictures, I may not have pursued it as much.
I suppose, but also having the players choose their own picture can sometimes backfire. When I asked you guys to choose pictures for your people, Yuji just never did. And
In what?
In D&D.
Oh, well...
And Tom chose a really jokey one. Canadian time.
And I think that that's harder because the players had much more, I'll say, limited options because we were playing in a D&D fantasy game.
Yeah,
where
fantasy was tough because I was pretty much at a loss. Like, I had, whenever I was like, oh, can you know, when there was ever an opportunity to add to the history of the Aladrin, I would seize it. But then it was like, can you pick a character? character's picture, and I'm like, I don't know, who looks like
yeah.
this guy? And now that Game of Thrones came out, I'm that like, oh yeah, those, you know, a couple guys in there that would do the trick.
Mm. Yeah, it's a lot easier with a modern setting, as I said, with those things. Yeah. So.
But I mean, with an NPC, like, it just so happens that game lent itself where you would pick NPCs that you know, adding to your herd, or basically harem. So if the player is picking attractive women that he's actually personally attracted to, then, I mean, that's only going to play into the game. That's only going to help your game.
Yeah.
And it's also going to help that person remember who they are, because they've actually picked
them. Yeah, I think
it's like when you write, you know, you're learning a new word or something, and you write it down, you're going to remember it more than somebody just tells you it.
Absolutely. But that goes with pictures in general, too, having that extra face.
Yeah, but I think sort of, giving the player sort of that ownership of choosing it, right? Like, if the player says, oh, my character has a significant other or a brother or sister, okay, fine, great. If you're going to use pictures, find that person for me.
Yeah.
Which is actually, Yujiro did that for my game. He said he had a sister, and I said, great, find that picture.
Oh, did he?
And, yeah, and, I mean, I'm not saying that he was attracted to that person, but it might have given him a bit more, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Motivation to actually be part of that story? I don't know.
Yeah, no, definitely. If somebody has an apartment, get them to decorate it. Get them to find pictures of what their apartment looks like. Mm. Just trying to think of other examples that we could do for props. I mean, we've done abstract representations or extensions of your character sheet. You can do that. Pictures are pretty easy to get players involved.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to have a battle in your apartment, a battle map of your apartment. Yeah, there's the ottoman.
You know, I really wanted to do they sell this really cheap toy projector for kids. I wanted to buy one of those things, just glue it to the ceiling and actually project out the battle map.
And then you would never get the deposit back on this place.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's part of it. But now this, because I wanted to have that picture to show it for, but I would never be able to print out the picture each time we played. But if I had just a projector, all I'd have to do is find a quick picture, doodle one up in Illustrator quick, and throw it up. So I always thought that would be kind of the dream, but never got there.
When we put our hands in that kind of...
There'd be a shadow when you put your hand over it, but when you take your hand away, it's still there.
All right. Well, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. It would have been,
We still can be.
It's true.
Yeah, you still do it. Don't let the dreams die.
Well, the full dream is to have one of those touchpad tables. Oh, those
interactive tables.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, drool.
You heard about that?
No, I've seen them. Yeah, it's getting there someday.
Yeah. Actually, I looked at the plans online. It's not that difficult to build one.
Didn't you say that about the other touchscreen monitor you were building?
Yeah, I couldn't find I'd have to buy a really expensive projector and have it shipped over from the States for it to work. But I actually got the touch part to work.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
I had read somewhere about that sort of like D&D table, and it had like the squares on it, and it was like a, you know, like a big TV screen, sort of flat panel table, and it had, but it also remembered things like what the effects did, and it put kind of like special effects on things, and in my opinion, that kind of took away from the experience.
Really, I'm really torn about that, you know, at what point, if you have this thing where you can just touch the guy and then you touch the enemy and choose your power and you see a little animation of him swinging a sword, where does it, you know, where do you draw the line, you know? Because it's almost becoming a video game. Because I think I remember, I was listening to another podcast where the guy was saying, if I see a little animation of a little figure swinging a sword, does that really add anything to the game? Because now I'm not imagining myself swinging that sword.
It.
Now all I see is this little guy doing it on a table. But that said, you know, having it there where you don't have to remember things, that also kind of frees up your imagination, takes you out of the numbers of it if you don't have to worry about them.
Wouldn't just a simple rule set help you?
Yeah, it would. I don't know. I really wonder what if it would be good or bad. I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things, like it's kind of mixed.
Wouldn't you have to remember, like, for example, if the effect is you daze your opponent, shouldn't you know that when you... cast that spell, for example, that it will daze the opponent?
Oh, definitely.
So how is the table helping when it's remembering that effect?
Because it would show it on the enemy.
Yeah.
So, but you know when you've cast a spell that it's dazing, because that's your intent.
But how about the number crunching? For example, like rolling the dice, adding your bonuses, subtracting their bonuses, whatever effects are on them.
So you have, I mean, then it becomes a video game, really. Because all of that stuff is happening, being done by a computer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is rolling the dice, is that so difficult?
No, not at all.
Is doing simple arithmetic? So difficult?
Not so simple sometimes.
When you get into D&D, like 10th level, it wasn't so simple. There are so many effects and things that I was losing track constantly.
Yeah, but I guess what's the difference between,
also,
say...
Also, I'm very poor at math, though.
Yeah, me too. But what's the difference between, like, that and, say, having, like, counters made up so you can put, like, okay, this guy's dazed, this
minus
guy's...
Minus one,
whatever.
Minus two, minus three, minus four counters.
Yeah, or some, or any kind of... So long as you have some visual representation to help remember.
I kind of... In that last battle that we did in D&D, where there was... That's where... The point when I kind of gave up on D&D, there was just so many effects on the bad guy at once, I couldn't keep track anymore. It would have been nice if there were a program that kind of... You guys push a button that's to hit, and it just tells me hit or not. Like, I don't actually need all the graphics and the animations or anything. It'd be nice to have that done for 4E. But that's also one of the reasons that I kind of put 4E aside as a system that I didn't want to run anymore. So I guess, yeah, it would be helpful in some games, but I don't think those are necessarily the games that I want to play.
Hmm. No, okay, yeah.
I see it. It would be neat if you could have... I mean, I could have a paper copy of these physical maps or battle maps. That'd be great. Mm-hmm. If some table provided it, you know, some touchscreen table provided that, that would be fine, just so you could place. I would actually rather to have little miniatures that you would place along. Mm-hmm. But if it was just like little tokens on the computer, that's fine.
Yeah.
But once it starts getting into showing special effects and I don't know, it might seem like a fine line, but then I'm like, I'm just kind of playing a computer game, a new style video game. Yeah, I'm playing like a board video game.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of on the same page with you, Lyle. Like, it's really tough for me to describe where that line is between
But I know what it is.
Yeah, but I know what it is. I know when I've gone past it. And I know when I don't like it. But describing to someone where that line is, such as when we've talked about like using Skype.
It's interesting. They did. We mentioned a few weeks back there was the Neverwinter Nights phenomenon, I suppose, where it was a D&D 3.5 game.
Cutting edge podcast. We're not even talking about Neverwinter 2.
Yeah. But it was an ancient time ago. But there was, for a while, where a lot of groups would meet over the internet, and there'd be a dungeon master, and he would run modules for him. Each person would play a character in there. And it had that. It crunched all the numbers, had effects and the animations and everything, but it died out. It didn't last. Mm. So I think I'm wondering if there's a difference between... How big of a difference there is between a role player and a video gamer?
Well, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. We'll have to. But I'm a role player. I don't mind playing video games. I actually play like real time strategy when I have. If I'm going to spend a little time on the computer, I'll play, you know, Dawn of War or something.
Yeah.
That's about as cutting edge as my computer games get.
I know if I turned on World of Warcraft, I would love it and never stop playing. But it's too dangerous. I spend way too much time.
I played it a month, had it for three, but for whatever reason, because when I go out to play role-playing games or board games, I'm going out with my friends, or even when my friends come over to my house, my wife understands that, but with
World Tone,
she's like, oh, more lonely time?
That's
great. Need some alone time there?
Some alone time. Not that.
No, honestly, it was almost as if it was on par with me being alone with, you know, like...
the cold blue glow of the computer.
I think
I was going to say pornography, but yeah.
They had an advertisement where they say, you know, if you're going to pretend to be an elf, you might as well do it with some friends.
Yeah,
I thought that was very...
For me,
it was effective, but I was already sold. I guess if I didn't have a role-playing group and had friends that were also doing World of Warcraft or something like that, yeah, I'd do it. I probably would rather get into, like, although I didn't play them and I heard they didn't get good reviews, the Warhammer Fantasy world or...
I guess...
world that I know from something else.
Honestly, if you guys weren't around for a group, I'd probably go to Skype and play with my friends back in the States as well. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just no replacing role-playing.
Mm. Or you guys, group hug!
In this love fest. All right.
Yeah, cool.
Well, we do use a lot of props and they can really add to some of us more than others, obviously. But they can definitely add to the game.
But
I guess the big thing is be consistent, because once you use them, you are going to raise the expectation.
Yeah, and keep in mind that any prop you put out there is going to get a lot of attention, so make sure that it's something worth giving attention to.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say, we talked about it, and, you know, players metagame, so use that to your advantage.
Absolutely. And have fun.
You know, it's funny when you use a phrase like, that's exactly what I was going to say, but we use that as an introduction to what you're going to say, instead of just going, that's exactly what I was going to say, period, finished.
Listen to me say it better.
I wanted to say a little bit more. Fine. Is that what you want me to say? Okay.
That's exactly what I was going to say. But I was going to say more. And
say,
here it is.
I was going to say it more and better.
Yeah. All right, everybody. We'll see you next time. Check us out online,
Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.